coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody. How you doing this evening? Chris Jordan here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas tonight. Happy holidays, everybody. We are but a few days away. Number one, tomorrow is solstice. Winter solstice is tomorrow. I attempted contacting Mr. Stone to come on and talk about America's Stonehenge, trying to get him on next week. I was kind of glad that it didn't go through, though, because there has been a kerfuffle amongst the UFO UAP truther community here in the last week. Not really just in the last week, in the last year or so. There has been a lot up in the air about Corey Good. Corey Good is, of course, most famously known for his work on The Cosmic Secret, Ascension Chronicles, Sphere of Influence, Above Majestic, other works. And he was really one of the first people to come forward, really the first person to come forward and say that he was a part of a secret space program, to say that he had been through testing as a child to make sure that he was ready for this, and spent 20 years off world, was age regressed, brought back, had experiences with blue avian aliens called the Anchar. And it begat a whole community of people, and began a whole movement within the community about such things like a secret space program existing. And of course, we have a space program. We know that we now have the Space Corps, the Space Force, as it's called. We've had things like that for years and years. And of course, there was the hack that happened many years ago, talking about the off-world officers, things like that. But Corey Good really took this thing to another level. He and his associate, well, no longer associate, David Wilcox, both of them produced this amazing show for Gaia. Corey left. It continued being produced. And Corey has since, I don't think by any choice of his own, but he has definitely come out and had to give a deposition in his lawsuit. So we will be getting into the lawsuit, the lawsuits that are pending, the deposition, which is the big kerfuffle in the community right now, where he openly admits that all of this is intellectual property. All of this is stories that he has made up. We will be getting into that and so much more with investigative reporter Mike Turber. He provided us some amazing stuff and connected us with Stephen Cambion. I want to thank you, Stephen Cambion, from Truth Seekers out there. That is where we will be playing all of our footage tonight. From Corey Good. They are the people that officially released all unredacted versions. There are chopped up versions. There's bits and piece versions, things like that have been out there. But Truth Seekers out there on YouTube, Stephen Cambion's show, put out the entire 6-part deposition. We'll be talking mainly about session 3 today, which is where they get into his off-world experience, the fact that this is all part of his meditation process and intellectual property. Mike Turber will be joining us for that. Thank you so much for building that bridge, my friend. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I am doing splendiferous. Doing quite well. Kind of getting ready to get the move on and get back to the other coast. And I'll be seeing you along the way because I'll be passing right by you. So that'll be a good thing.
Heck yeah. I can't wait.
And then
we're both going to be in Vegas. So, you know, you never know what happens then.
What happens in Vegas? Hopefully we'll
see. That's it, buddy. Now, earlier before the show started, I was talking about a video. I'm playing this video right now. Off of our Facebook page. And this is a video that I took, and I posted this today with full disclosure about how it was made. This is actually a close-up video of the planet Mars out of focus, and you can see the camera trying to focus and things like that. It looks otherworldly. Mm-hmm. But the whole reason that I posted that was literally as an exercise to be like, hey, folks, you know, we need to remember that we have a due diligence. Even if we are true believers, I am a true believer, Mike. I truly believe that there is life out there, that there is something else. But that does not mean that I'm not willing to admit that something like the video that I posted is simply what it is. And the claims of Corey Good were large. They were big. They weren't Bob Lazar size, which is still huge and big. So much so that, hey, you might think Bob Lazar is crazy, folks, but Lazarium exists now. The element that he said it exists actively exists in the periodic table right where he said it would. So that's a different story. But the claims of Corey Good were huge. The fact that he actively states that that these things are real. That is how he put them out there. Yeah.
Right. And here's a quick comparison, because you brought up Bob Lazar, and I'm glad you did, because this is a perfect time to interject this thought. You have on one hand a man who is taking what he is saying is his experiences, and is greatly attempting to profit from those, and then you have Bob Lazar, the exact opposite, who has really just kind of said his thing, said his piece, and has not really, you know, pushed his story. If Lazar went out and pushed his story out to make, you know, a living at it or something, then he would probably do quite well because his story is kind of interesting too. Not as fantastical or whatever that word was. I was trying to remember which one was real, which one was. But it's two like polar opposites, but at the base of it, both of their stories are, very fanciful and non-verifiable and things of that nature. But one is really trying to profit off the other, or one's trying to profit off of their own stories, where the other one's really not. And then at the same time, this individual is suing the people that essentially could have been his staunchest supporters, obviously to a degree. But listening to his deposition, I am glad to have seen, you know, all of it now, so that there's no speculation as to what he actually said.
Yeah.
And it's very helpful to hear him say something. So some things he said makes a lot of sense as to why he did things the way he did it. But they all make sense now, when he alludes to the fact that basically everything was a work of fiction.
Yeah.
And the first clue everyone should have had that this was a work of fiction is if someone trademarks something.
Yep.
If you go out and you trademark something or copyright something or whatever, that has to belong to you. Yep. You have to be able to prove that through the trademark office that that's you. So if he goes out and tries to trademark the term 20 and back, and he tried to trademark the term Blue Avian and trademark the term Secret Space Program.
Oh, ain't no tried.
Yeah.
We'll be showing the footage here in a little while the lawyer literally refers to Blue Avian, and he says trademark.
Yeah.
Like, and he trademarked.
And how can you trademark something that exists? It's real. It'd be I trademark Apache.
I trademark cobras.
Yeah. It's like I trademark humankind.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Yeah. You can trademark your name as it relates to a product that you produce. Like, you wanted to make an Apache helicopter, and you wanted
Trump.
To Apache.
Prime example.
Yeah.
I hate saying it, folks, but the man's name is trademarked. He has the Trump board game from the 1980s. Like, that's what he does, is he sells his name and access to it. That's what he does. You know.
And so here we have someone that, bells and a lawyer would have, or someone that's well versed in the patent trademark area, would look at this and go, wait a second, he's trademarking something that is, to him, or what he's trying to sell as real, and he's basically bragging that it's his IP and that it's his trademark. Yet these entities are supposedly real. Wait a second. You know, and that's when you should step back and go, a little bit, and go, okay, you can't do that. But he did. And that would have immediately, I kind of looked past that a little bit, but at the same time, you go, okay, yeah, I see what he's doing.
Yeah. No, and that's part of it. And he blatantly says that. Let's go ahead real quick and give me 1 second here.
Sure.
Because I am hiding a dirty secret in the background right now as I fix something. So that's how honest I am. I'm willing to let you know that there is a dirty secret going on in the background, folks. But let's go ahead and get started. This is 10 minutes into session 3 of his deposition, which happened September 26th. So this is not necessarily a hot off the press just happened situation, but a hot off the press just became public knowledge situation. Mm-hmm. So here is the words of Corey Good himself.
Some of that's from fighting in wars with aliens. Is that right?
No, it's from a traumatic childhood.
Okay. You didn't claim that in your lectures, that it was, some of that was from fighting with aliens?
Never. The PTSD, I never publicly described why I had it, but to people that I worked with, I had told them what the PTSD was from.
Didn't you claim that you were speaking with Anshar at some point in time?
Yeah, that's when I meditate. Those are my guides.
Okay. And that's a future species living inside the Earth?
Yes.
And you communicate with them on a regular basis?
Yeah. And it's also a part of my IP and creative arts that we're making movies and video games out of.
So you're saying that no one else can communicate with them but you?
Well, yeah. They're my spirit guides. They came from me.
And so you're saying Anshar is unique to you. No one else can communicate to them but through you.
Let's see. Anshar.
Or just answer my question.
It's in my franchise Bible.
My creation. Bible.
I'm a content creator.
The franchise Bible is one of my favorite things there. And, that's just the beginning, folks, of him saying that Anshar, the people that he claims lived in the middle of the earth, things like that. And believe me, we have mediums on the show. All right. Full believer. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. However, what those mediums don't do is sell their experience in the way that Corey does.
Yeah.
In the fact of this is what I did. And he claims fan fiction.
You've got to give it to that attorney, though, because think about this for a moment. As that attorney was asking him the question, he handled that with kid gloves big time, because he did not immediately start going, wait a second, you made all this up? You know, he knew where he was going to go, but he did it in such a well-mannered, very tactical, strategic way of doing it.
Yeah.
In that he allowed Corey to say what Corey said without him prompting, saying something to the effect of, now, you know, you are the only person that can talk to the blue avians, correct, sir? And blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay. So obviously then they don't exist. You know, he could have went just immediately off the deep end that way, and he didn't, and he did it amazingly well. I have to admit that that attorney did a very good job in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And here is the section here. Let me get to it. There we go.
Part of this intellectual property, and
it's content that's created by you.
Yes.
Okay.
And all of the delusional people in the community who take this information, it is what you call fan fiction.
Okay.
So people that are talking about the Anshar and all of these different secret space program things, it's fan fiction based on my real life experience that I dramatized to create
and
this.
And so people are delusional if they believe it.
They're delusional if they believe they were in the secret space program and in contact with the Anshar, who are my creation.
Do you believe you were part of the secret space program?
I was part of a secret program. I was.
And whose secret was it?
What do you mean?
You said it's a secret space program. Whose secret?
It was a government secret, I guess.
Which government?
The United States government.
Okay. And so you say that you're part of the secret space program?
I was a part of... I was brought into my lab programs when I was in elementary school, brought to Carswear Air Force Base, where we went through all sorts of experiments and training.
Which Air Force Base?
Carswell. It's now joint, and they changed it. So Fort Worth.
Okay. And so because of that, you're part of the secret space program?
No, I was brought into a secret space program based on that training. And after that, I did this.
And so the secret space program was introduced to you when you were in elementary school, right?
When I was 17.
I thought you said elementary school.
No, that was the training, the MyLab training, where they took us out of school and did training and experiments.
Now,
and we say they took you out and did training.
The part that I get a little antsy about there is where he calls people delusional.
Yeah.
Once again, I am a tried true believer. I believe in life on other planets. I believe in contacting other realms and dimensions of intelligence, even.
Yeah, as do I.
To call people delusional, especially within the community. Once again, the video that I made and posted, I posted because I think that even we believers, we should have a much greater burden of proof. We tend to get very wrapped up. There are numerous people within the community who, whenever given a video of an anomaly, will immediately jump to the extreme, without just saying, okay, honest UFO, flying object that is unidentified, period. Doesn't have to
and
be extraterrestrial.
They'll accept it at face value. And as long as it comes from someone in the community that they can welcome into the fold, either as new or someone that has been in the community and brings new evidence to the, you know, like a classic case in point would be third base, you know, secret team or secure team rather, and some other ones that have been around for a while. They'll bring in something, and there's a core group, you know, in that community that, that just accepts it. And then if someone comes in and says the opposite, you know, that is just instantly wrong. But it's understandable because it's borderline. I don't want to throw religion into this mix, but it's borderline a belief system, and that once you're entrenched in it, it's extremely difficult to see outside of it. And then on top of that, you feel an inherent belief or like a obligation to defend it at all costs. And one of the ways to defend it is to accept more into it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it does the word fan, even when he uses fan fiction, the word fan has its root in fanaticism.
Yeah. And in his case, I would have said Pulp Fiction, maybe.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, I'll take this stretch. You don't have to do it because it's your show, but I'll take the stretch and go into some aspects of various parts of this community and other communities or whatever have a deeper level to them to where it becomes almost a cultist kind of thing.
Almost.
Almost. I would never call the UFO community a cult community because it's just simply not. But there's aspects of it that you start to sense. It's like the Lou Elizondo thing. He could never do any wrong. And, you know, it got to be that way. Before 2017, this was it.
Yeah.
You know, you had David Wilcox and you had, you know, Corey Good and a few others, you know, Greer and some other, you know, facets here and there that were entrenched in this. And their movement in this community was far more than what happened after 2017 for many people, because it was so, I mean, it's like this creative imagination, you know, wonderful world. But for many, it's real, and it very well could have been real. I can't really say one way or another because who am I, right?
Well, I mean, we can definitely say now, granted, any experiences that somebody had with these entities that he created, now granted, there is the concept that we talk about with our guests later on tonight in our pre-recorded segment of the Egregore, and the idea that an entity can come to be from a mass consciousness and from a mass will. Now,
think about this for a moment, too. If you look at this from him, and I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But from when Corey mentions the blue avian, and he is in contact with them, and he became extreme. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was someone else came up and said they had been in contact with them too, and they were also with Gaia. Then Good got extremely upset with that person because of two reasons. One, he wanted that all for himself, but if these blue avians truly existed, why couldn't they talk to somebody else? If they truly existed, wouldn't you want someone else to also have seen them to have, you know, some backup there and say, well,
corroboration. You know,
yeah, of course. But the only reason that you would get mad is because you wanted it all for yourself. And if it's your creation and you're trying to defend it and protect it because it's your IP, then that means it ain't real. And it's all you.
Well,
so that's an issue.
There's no source better than the horse's mouth itself. Let's hear that from Corey right now.
Okay.
Because of that, what did that cause you to do with the secret space training?
What did it cause me to do?
Yes. Like, for instance, you've said you've done 20 and back journeys where you go away for over 20 years and you come back.
Yep. Trademark.
You've done that, and you've done that many times, right?
Correct. That's the dramatization on top of the story. Like I said...
Are you saying it's dramatization or is it real?
Part of it's real, part of it's dramatization.
What part,
like I've said about all of this.
What part is dramatization?
Be more specific, please.
Sure. What part of the 20 and back is dramatization and not real?
Well, the 20 and back itself is my creation. That's why I trademarked it, and that's why it's a part of my intellectual property.
So does that mean it's not real? It's dramatization?
What does it matter if it's real or not?
I'm asking you whether it was dramatization or was it real?
It's a real part of my dream or delusion, of whatever you want to call it. I created all of this as on top of the training that I did have and the experiences that I did have. I extrapolated this stuff out and created it.
Okay, but it's a dream or delusion, you call it, correct?
If whatever yeah. y'all want to call it.
Well, what do you call it?
I call it my intellectual property.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
And that's just trademark. Like those videos you see where the guy trademark. Comes on and says, it was at that moment when Corey knew he had messed up.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because he makes no bones about saying this. And what it recalls for me vividly is the words of the lawyer of Alex Jones saying that what he does on air is a character,
right?
That it's acting.
Correct.
And same thing here, you know, he's basically saying that, well, I mean, he says that some of it is channeled. The avians are channeled beings that he talks to.
Right.
And that the 20-year journeys are utterly right. his intellectual property. He made them up. The right. only thing that may be real here is when he was young in elementary school, he may mm-hmm. have been taken to a military base and, you know, hey, been given like intelligence tests. Who knows?
Yeah. Not at Carswell. I know Carswell. Carswell was it's like a strategic base. They had bombs. It was for bombers and stuff like that. It's been closed for a while, but, you know, I think about it in a way I can relate to because I am the pot calling the kettle black at this moment. If I'm going to, you know, say something about Corey, then, you know, people are going to be like, well, Turber, didn't you do a hoax yourself? Well, yes, I absolutely did. And this is where I can kind of draw the perspective game here. I had to live inside that character if I was going to go through with it, including me talking to you. Remember, I would try not to do shows with you too much about that subject because it became, there are some parts of the story. I wasn't comfortable lying to my friends and you and Jim Breslow and then even Michael Sala, when he came on board, you know, there's a certain point where you have to separate the two things, but you're doing it under the guise that you're creating a documentary. You want to get into the community and you want to see it from the inside. And then you want to go where it goes. And that was what I had made the decision in my mind that wherever this goes, I'm going to go with it for as long as I can. But I can't live my whole life. It would have to fall apart eventually. But I mixed in enough truth to where there are some instances that I have personal, like the phone call, you know, that did actually happen. And some other aspects, but there's a point where in his mind, because I had the same thought in my mind, he had to know, wait a second, I'm portraying this, say, like when you're on air, you're one character, like you were saying with Alex, I mean, off air, you just go back to your normal person. He was in character off air and he was telling people as he met them, the story.
Oh yeah.
As if it was legitimately actually
absolutely.
Real.
Absolutely.
And so that Yeah, that was a downfall.
I was going to say, let's hear that from the horse's mouth as well, because he goes into that in the deposition about how delivering it is true as part of the PR. And that's right here.
I mean, I have told you that I made up stuff on top of it. And in this book, it says so. So, yes, I did make up stories about the secret space program extrapolated off of my experiences that I told you about earlier.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. So you stated in one place that you've done 3 of these 20s and backs. So that's an extrapolation. That's not reality.
Okay. If y'all took about 10 minutes to read this, you will see it talks about Corey Good, the real person, and Corey Good, the persona that this stuff is based off of. All you have to do is read through this, and I mean, anyone in the jury will be able to read through it and make sense of that. But me delivering my intellectual property as if it's all absolutely true, yes, that is definitely a part of the PR and way to get this information out to the public. So
that it's not, because it's not true.
Not all of it. Like I said, I have created everything that's in this book was created off of my experiences, what I perceived as my experiences, or just created it as a content creator on top of and used those as reference.
Now, that's just part of that. Where he says that, you know, saying it as though it was true was part of the PR.
Yeah. You know, there's another story that just came to my mind. I started thinking about it. In one instance, you would feel sorry for him if he had these experiences, or whether or not they actually happened or not, but in his mind, maybe he dreamed them and then they became part of his reality. And so over time, you start to tell like a fish tale kind of thing. And then you just get wrapped up in it and there's really not much you could do about it. And you don't remember who you told one story to or who another. And then you just live it. And then the other aspect of it is something that may have actually occurred to where it affected him so much that it was real. And I think her name's Angelil or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, where she was, you know, the cave that she was in and talked to the aliens. And for her, that experience is real. Now, my personal belief is that I think someone slipped her something and she had a full ayahuasca experience or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that's pure speculation on my part, but it would make sense because it was an isolated event, happened one time and that was it. But for him, it carried on. Now it's gone back to his, you know, the story has grown bigger and bigger and bigger to where it's gone into his childhood. And then forward. Now he ran out of years and usable life to do all this stuff. So he had to create a way to create it. And he had the 20 in back. He says, wow, okay. Well, he can go 20 years and get it back.
I am not begrudging any creator their room to create. I am not begrudging anybody their room for the First Amendment to write whatever they please. Yep. Say whatever they please. However, repercussions happen. Things happen. Yep. He himself called the people who followed like a Pied Piper his story delusional.
Delusional. Yep,
if you call it a delusion, whatever, for his own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you see it happening and you continue the action, that's when it's a problem. That's when you are predatorially taking advantage of people for their belief in something.
And keep in mind, these depositions that he put out in the very beginning, it was very important for his attorney and for him to know that these were going to be confidential and essentially that no one would ever see or hear these in any way, shape, or form, and that it would be kept sealed or whatever he thought, whatever was told to him, he believed that no one would see or hear this. Now, that you and I both know that would just, you go into something with the expectation that it's going to leak out, so you better say things in it that are at least factual and truthful. So for that, point. I'm glad he did come clean, so to speak, and say, hey, but he was still, you could tell that when the attorney was asking him that question, he still was holding on to some aspect of it. Like, well, it was my creation based on my experience. No, it's not. You didn't experience those things.
What he experienced was being a part of some sort of experiment. Once again, hey, for all we know, the U.S. military was working with the local school system to figure out a better means for ASVAB, you know?
Yeah.
And they used a group of elementary school children, and then we're going to check in with them whenever they went for ASVAB at 18. Who knows?
Yep.
Who knows? Yep. But what he did was take those incidents, and that's what I'm saying. You want to see that happen? Cool, man. You want to say you were part of a program on a military base?
Yeah.
Okay. Everything else is fiction. Now, the thing is, you kept pushing the fiction when people started following and believing.
Exactly. It's just like Tim McMillan. Tim McMillan, when I first talked to him, I was still in the documentary / mode or whatever. But when I told him that I entered the Air Force as Electronic Intelligence Operations Specialist at 205, 50, 205, 70, depending on what level you're at, I told him that was my job code. And he basically said, BS. And he called me on it. And I'm thinking, okay, what is it that you actually think? He thinks that, oh, maybe I went in as a cook and really just wanted to explain to everybody, you know, because I had to explain, you know, being places and whatever. Mm. Maybe I created all of being in a 205-30 or 205-50 or 70 as my story just to create a new life or something. But no, that actually was what I went in as. And that's the truth. And the thing for what's going on here is Corey has, we need to look at this even further, because we need to get, there's got to be a psychological thing here that you might want to have someone explain, because all of these times I've been involved in, like with Flat Earth, with this community, with various communities. I'm not trying to put Flat Earth with the UFO community, but there's some similar aspects in several of these communities that
when it comes to fanaticism, there are similar aspects.
Yeah. And you see, and when you see that, you start drawing the parallels and you go, okay, there's a similar thing going on here, because it's both have a very strong anti-government / conspiracy, that conspiratorial mind process. And I get that. I fully understand it. But yet I don't fully understand it. And I do want to understand it, because for me, a lot of my friends are in it. And I've met a lot of people that are true, genuinely sincere, good people. Yet we have a very fundamental difference of opinion on what something is, like the three videos from the Navy. I know what they are in my mind. Yeah. They know what they are in their mind. I feel I can prove it. And they feel they can prove it. And you're at an impasse. And then you look at the person and go, you know what? I'm not going to ruin this friendship because of this one thing, because I'm also an atheist and I have to deal with this every day of my life. So maybe Corey has so much trauma that happened to him earlier in his life that he felt that living in alternate reality was a way out for him to deal with it. And that is what I personally believe. I think if I could sit down with Corey for about 2-3 hours and go, you know what? I created a little alternate little reality for myself and I lived in it for a while.
Yeah. This was my escape from the PTSD, was this alternate reality that I made. I mean, very, very, very much akin to, oh my God, what was that? I'm trying to remember the name of the graphic novel movie that came out a few years ago where it was the same way. It was a bunch of girls in a hospital who were superheroes.
Yeah, and notice he creates the graphic novel. I know what you're talking about. That was their out. That was their their way of dealing with
their,
it.
And their shared experience and their shared world that they all went to escape the tortures of their everyday, you know.
But here's where it gets weird. When some people are trying to be a member of a community that really does a lot of these things, myself included.
Same.
You know, so when we come out and we say, like, okay, I'm trying to rescue people in Afghanistan, and then next thing you know, I'm talking with Howard and Carol Baskin, and I'm involved in Tiger King, and then I'm doing the UFO thing, and here I am about to go to, well, you know what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
I can't say it on here. So here I'm about to go do something that's pretty out there.
Just for whoever's listening, I don't know everything about what he's going to do.
Yeah, but you
I know nothing. I know nothing.
You know nothing. The powers of speed. We're sworn to secrecy. But you know, when you look, but I told you a lot of stuff that probably.
Hey, brother. Here's the thing. Once again, as my viewers know, I once pushed buttons for Alex Jones. You can say whatever you want. The minute that people start following the Piper's tune and you continue the dialogue in the same way without backpedaling it at that moment and going, whoa, hold on.
That's right.
Hold on, everybody. I know you're trying to say that you were in the secret Space Force too. Like, this is all part of a reality that I have created that comes from not only my PTSD roots, but my experiences through meditation. Okay.
And that's kind of what he did with the guy that was claiming he was also talking to the blue avians. He's like, no, you weren't, because that's my creation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he says that. Let's get into that right here. Actually, I've got that queued up about the blue avians being trademark.
Okay. There you go.
You say you've been visited by over a 6 foot tall, blue looking chicken type creature.
Blue avian trademark.
Yes, that. So that's something that hasn't really happened, but that's a story you tell to assist people to something.
It was a part of my meditative state, and it was real to me, a real avatar. I really interface with a blue avian. It's my way of connecting to my higher self and connecting to higher information, to be able to bring down information that doesn't come from the human experience. It comes down from higher. That's what people believe in this community. It's a part of many of our religious beliefs of higher density beings, just like some people preach about angels. Higher density beings, angels, interchangeable.
Now, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I have numerous times. I have a dream guide. I have a dream guide. I have somebody that I go down a repetitive path every night to go talk to. Things like that. It is a form of my meditation. Absolutely. Now, am I taking those messages or questions that I'm trying to have answered? That's normally what it is. Like, something's boggling my mind, and it's like, okay, let's search elsewhere. Let's go ask the guide and see what he knows.
So is this you manifesting something that you can kind of like you don't, I don't want to say talking to yourself, but in your dream or in your dreamlike state that you somewhat have this entity that you utilize to help guide you, even though it's still you.
Yeah. Okay, like a Virgil.
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
and I don't have a problem with that.
If that's what his blue avian is, that's cool. Now the question comes to bear once again, when people start following the Piper's tune, at what point do you divulge that?
At the point where the Piper jumps off a cliff, you don't go with them.
Yeah. or when he's just standing on the side of the cliff and keeps on playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then everybody just, keep going. Here's the cooler,
everybody. I'm right here. I'm going to bring up the rear and make sure we all make it.
Man. This is truly sad, though. I won't defend Corey because he dug his own hole. But I have to say this. When I have a large amount of empathy in me to the point where it has ruined a very large portion of my life. I won't say ruined. I'll say that I don't have a normal life because of my empathy.
Yeah, it has definitely affected your norm.
Right. I help and volunteer myself to the point where I'll run myself in the ground. I've done it a couple of times, and people look, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm helping people." Yeah, but you can't help anybody if you run yourself in the ground. And I think with Corey, the empathy part of me goes, this guy, you know, has a problem, and he's still dealing with it because he's having a difficult time with this attorney, but he knows he's in an environment where this should be like a release for him. This should be the moment where he sits back and goes, "Wow, it's all out there now. I can relax and actually live a life again where people will understand why I did what I did because I explained it." Instead of, "Man, I hope these are going to remain confidential. I hope no one ever sees them." And hats off to Stephen Cambion for getting this out there, because Stephen Cambion has probably done a huge, you know, good for good.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
Not
no,
like,
no, yeah, most definitely. It is.
I can think of Eric Good from Tiger King.
I mean, but, it's quite literally the fact of had this been suppressed as requested. Once again, my thing, even when it comes to Alex Jones, is those who followed along.
Well, what happened on September 25th?
And the fact of, you know, those whose lives are affected in that way.
Right. You know, exactly. 100% correct. And you had to live through that.
Well,
and see it.
Well, and there's a whole bunch of people within a community who trusted somebody and trusted somebody because somebody that they trusted said you could trust them.
Yeah.
You know, to begin with, to look at somebody as mentor, to look at somebody as even guru in a way, as people do with some of the folks like David Wilcox, even with Corey Good, you know, because he was doing like dream work seminars. He was doing spiritual work seminars. Yeah. All kinds of things.
Yeah, it's like they're getting into areas that I would say, do you actually have any expertise in this area? Or is this just some other thing you figured out how to do?
I'm not going to doubt anybody's power of meditation. I'm not going to doubt anybody's communication with a being while in a meditative state. However, when you start weaving a story around that and selling thus as true,
When
people come to you and say, "I experienced that," and you go, "Man, glad to hear it too."
Yeah. But he didn't do that.
Glad to get, nope. Nope.
And he didn't
call them out publicly and be like, "Yeah, I wish you did, but unfortunately, like, that's all hyperbole based on an experience that I had as a kid where I was part of a military joint experiment."
Yep. And we just heard that clip and you played it, and it starts to make sense. It's hard to listen to all of it. Now, I can imagine if I would have been one of the followers of him and had believed what he had said, and then all of a sudden
I enjoyed it.
I would have been devastated. I would have been like, you know, and he must be getting calls where people go, "Oh my God, man, you did this." And he's given other people PTSD. These people probably were living in his alternate universe and finding that there was some peace and some solace there. And now it comes out in this deposition that none of that was real. Then what does that mean? Does that mean everyone that has ever pushed his story has to come back and kind of retract everything? And, you know, it's just like I had to retract my own thing. I came back on, you know, Jim's show and said, "You know what? I got to clear this up. I can't let this go on anymore."
Well, and here he is, folks, just in case you didn't hear him a while ago. Here it is later on in the testimony or deposition, not testimony. Testimonies are under oath. But here it is in the deposition.
In the secret space program.
No.
there were others.
Right.
So if someone
your question was, did I disparage anyone?
So my question is now, if you were not the only one there, why couldn't someone else talk about their experience in the secret space program?
As long as they don't talk about the stuff that I created based on my real my real IP here. It says I created a lot of the stuff. I created Darkfleet. Darkfleet didn't exist before I talked about it. Now all these people are popping up. I was on Darkfleet. It's part of my story.
All sorts
story.
Of fleets that are darker in color.
The delusional ones.
But they're using every bit of my IP.
They use 100% of it? So
they base all of their story on my IP.
All of it?
All of it.
100%?
Yes.
Just a recopy of your
they
work.
Recopy. That's why Gaia is being sued.
Word for word.
Pretty much.
Same color, same everything.
No, I mean,
well,
you said
pretty much, or is it all?
It's pretty much.
Well, that's
people. No, the people will come in and they will say, oh, okay, I was in the secret space program too, and all of these things that Corey has talked about, well, yeah, I was a part of that too. Well, guess what? The stuff that I've talked about, some of it created out of my mind in this book as a part of my IP, if they're out there making money and doing things to harm this IP, this storyline, then I say something publicly.
Okay.
If they're out there making money or saying things to harm this IP, now granted, I am saying nothing to harm your IP. Think your IP is cool. Really great story. Really interesting. Like I said, tugged my chain for a long time. Where it's like, I don't know. I don't know whether to call BS or not. And that's where a lot of people in the community were.
Let me give you something that happened with Michael Sala. And I'm not going to in any way try to harm Michael Sala because he was asking me questions about Corey Good. He asked me if I knew Corey Good, and I said no. And because it's at the time when we were talking about the secret space program, Michael Sala wanted my expertise in that area, which is somewhat quite limited, but there's a couple of very specific things that I did work on that oddly enough is coming back literally like 3 hours ago. And you start to go, okay, where are you going with this? And what he wanted me to do was to essentially confirm what Corey Good was talking about, because he felt that I was more credible than Corey was on my stint my interaction with military, my interaction with DARPA and things like this. So he wanted to know that aspect of it. And if Corey's story made sense.
And at the time, I don't.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Is that you? Oh, no problem. And so at the time I was trying to figure out where he was going with it. And basically he wanted to validate Corey's story. But he wanted me to do the validation or the vetting of it. And I said that I can't do that because I don't know Corey. I mean, I can check some other things, but Corey wasn't in the military. So I don't know. And,
not in the public military. No.
And you have to take things with a grain of salt, because here I am feeding Michael Sala my own line of BS. And at the same time, some actual truth, which he was able to check out. He did some things, and that's why he wrote that nice defense thing of me, which I felt bad about. But at the same time, he was fishing for information for that, which to me made Michael Sala seem more legitimate, because he was actually trying to figure things out. But then after the fact, I start reading about these council meetings that are off of Jupiter and things like this. And I go, oh my God, who did I just give my story to? But then I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Everybody in this community has a strength. They have, something they offer to it for whatever it is, whether it's an entertainment purpose, which we now find out what Corey Good was doing.
Yeah.
Or from a factual standpoint that they either A, actually believe an event happened to them, or B, the event really did happen to them. Either way, they offer something to the community, and everyone can get something from that. And I feel that that's important. But just like you, when someone starts pushing a story and they're making money off of it, and they're doing all kinds of what I feel is manipulation of the community. When you start manipulating a community, especially when you start picking sides and making people, you know, believe me, not him, you know, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. That's a problem. And I'm guilty.
Let's hear about that manipulation directly from Corey right here in his deposition.
Absolutely.
Anavar was after I had lost all of the weight because of my change in diet. I went to being a vegetarian. I lost weight like it was a waterfall falling off of a mountain. And then over the months, and it was like, oh, I believe so.
Here we go.
What?
Well, because...
I'm going to caution you not to divulge any privileged information.
Okay.
What's your understanding of why you sent a cease and desist to him?
After Gaia decided they were going to steal my intellectual property, they brought him in as the actor that repeated my testimony.
Wow.
Now there's that part. I was trying to find the part where he is talking about David Wilcox here, and let's see, it should be up around 44 right here.
Of one books, right?
Here you go.
Now that's what David Wilcox makes that connection.
You don't make that connection?
I humor him. I kind of started, you know, basing information off of what David said a little bit, you know, about the Law of One stuff. I was never a big subscriber to the Law of One.
Okay, so the Law of One books produced by L&L Research in the 80s, that's not...
So, yeah, I mean, there he is right there saying that he was actively creating, like, as David Wilcox would come out with something, mm-hmm. he would connect and bridge his stuff with it and weave it together.
And we see that a lot.
And, you know, that in and of itself, once again, is manipulation of a community of people, manipulation of a mindset. And when you are willing to do such and profit from it, that's when it gets a little bit crazy. Now, here is the final admission that I'll play for tonight. And then we have one other clip, but here is him talking about his trips.
Very, very close.
Did you ever go to space?
Did I ever go to space?
Yes.
I, in my physical body?
Yes.
I don't believe so, but I travel astrally, and I travel out to outer space, and...
Once again, not what was ever represented, not what he ever really said was the case until now.
Didn't he say he was fighting aliens and on Mars or the moon and stuff? And like he was physically there. The story was not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the PTSD that we played in the first clip. That's what the lawyer was asking, was, is your PTSD from fighting aliens, as you've mentioned? Yeah. Said, I never said that's what my PTSD, I never said that I had PTSD. That's something that I shared with some private people.
Like, and then he kind of admitted that he had PTSD from his childhood, from growing, I don't know if you played that part or not, but I remember seeing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once again, if this is a narrative that he came up with to make himself the hero rock star in his own melodrama that protected him from PTSD as a child. Cool.
Yeah. Well, that is cool. But now we're going to have a class action lawsuit against him because we now have PTSD from dealing with the crap from him.
Well, and there are going to be some people though who, much like the actions of Alex Jones, it wasn't necessarily what he said. It was the actions of the people who were motivated by his words.
Correct.
It was the tens of thousands of people who annually emailed people saying, what you're saying is fake. What you're saying is fake. We know you're a liar. And that was the aftermath. That's what he has to pay recompense for. And right now, that's kind of what Corey has to pay recompense for is a yes. Even though, like he says, these people are delusional. Then why are you feeding their delusion?
True. Yeah, I threw in the little Trump joke.
That is a predatory action. And here's the last clip that I'll play. And this is where they talk about his profit and his gain from this predatory action.
Mm-hmm. And how much approximately per year or per month are you collecting for above Majestic?
I think it's between like $8,000 and $12,000 a month coming in.
Okay.
So.
And is
I haven't looked in a long time, so I.
So yeah, there you have it. Between $8,000 and $12,000 a month. That's as of right now.
That's just on above Majestic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't mention anything else. So who knows what the actual total would be.
Yeah. He didn't mention Ascension Chronicles sphere of influence. He didn't mention Cosmic Secret. He didn't mention any of the spiritual classes that he offers online, which are a direct result of this world that he created, which is fine if you created a world. It's fine even if you channeled a world.
What's funny, too, is
I'm a big, big believer in the work of Edgar Cayce. A thing that he said did not come from a channeled session. All right.
Right.
But fully disclosed that what he was doing was channeling.
Yeah. Plenty of followers
and all accepted the fact that he was channeling.
Yep, and Corey could have went that route and said, listen, here's the experience I had. I don't know if it actually happened or not, but this is what I got from it. Make from it what you will. Which is kind of like the way Bob Lazar went. Bob Lazar said, look, this is what happened. Here's why I work. Here's this and that. Here's what was there. Here's what I did. Take it or leave it. That kind of thing. And that kind of like gave Lazar's story such length of time of its, still holding. I mean, there's still people to this day, a lot of people to this day that believe every aspect of his story, even though many, many holes have been cut out of it. But there still has to be some truth there.
Hey, Lazarium exists.
Yes.
Been found, has the properties he said it did, and right on the periodic table where he said it would be.
Yep. And then the other part of me wants to, I mean, how much influence did Corbell have on all of this? And did, who influenced who? But, with back to Corey, he's got a lot to deal with right now. I'm not defending him, and in no way empathizing with him, because he just like I had to do, I dug my thing, I had to deal with it, I'm still dealing with it. He has to do his thing himself, and he has to get his way out of it. But at some point, he has to come like legitimately clean. If something's true and something's a fact, he has to know the difference. It sounds like he's got an issue with both. Like he can't tell the difference between truth and actual fiction or fact. They're just simply different things, and he's living in it, and he still has to make an income from it, and he still has a family to support, and he's probably scared to death right now because he stands to lose a lot because these depositions are now public, and there's going to be a lot of kickback on this. And so,
it's much like I've said about the situation of the hole that Alex Jones dug for himself. It's the fact of, you have gotten to a point that of personal mania. You've gotten to a point where, yes, like you said, you have played the part so long that the part is now the norm. The part now exists outside of the studio. The part is now everyday life. And it gets to the point that nobody can tell you otherwise.
Yeah. If you have to live your character, just like if you know, Jim Kirk and Spock were the same. Well, if I walked into a bar and Leonard Nimoy was standing there and I started talking to him and he started talking to me as Spock, I'd be like, yo, dude.
Well, it's the fact
give it a rest.
Once you have edified yourself and built yourself up on numerous fronts, but one of the foundations is built upon this.
Yeah.
And then it comes to bear that this is not that.
I'm wondering if he didn't.
It can
really
crumble a lot
ahead.
Of things, and it can crumble it yourself. Can. And it can. It, and it's the fact of you have to believe it more than anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
And I'm just curious if he might need some help. I don't want to say what kind of help, but he's going to need someone to help him through this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a big, thing. And you know, much like AJ's moment right now. It's a big, as we'd say in youth work, it's a big come to Jesus moment. There are no atheists in foxholes, and once you're in the foxhole, you get close to Jesus pretty quick.
That's right.
He is definitely in the foxhole right now. He is definitely in the front of I don't think he's in front of the situation, but he's definitely in the front with the situation.
He's in front. There's grenades in that foxhole with him, and he's probably trying to toss them out, but he's having a hard time.
I think Mike, it's really the fact of once again, will he be held accountable for once again the mania instilled in other people? When you're talking about the people who follow me and the people who believe this are delusional, and yet still you keep feeding it to them.
Yeah.
It can't be any different than a Tony Robbins situation, man. We're like, dude, when the first 8 people burned their feet, why'd you keep asking people to cross the fire that Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because the next one might not. Yeah, but the other 8 did.
Yeah, and then he told them to step into this water before they got onto the fire, and then it ended up that was alcohol.
At some point, there is something that takes over and clicks where you believe your own hype.
Right.
And I think right now he is facing the music of his own hype. And hopefully will be at least held accountable in some way for his hype. I don't know if it'll be monetarily or anything like that.
He's got a hell of a time by all means. I mean, you know, there's some narcissistic personality traits that he has. I have them too, so I can relate to that. But there's the other aspect of it is because the empathy part plays into it. He's not really showing that sign that, oh man, now that I think about it, I may have screwed up.
No real remorse in any of that. Like easily, whenever you go to the Facebook page, 7-8 hours almost of deposition amongst all the sessions, amongst eight hours, everything was very matter of fact, very cold. In the way that you heard it delivered today, referred literally legally as his intellectual property trademark.
Right. And like trademark. I said earlier, what happened September 23rd? You know, the days after this, he has to reflect back on it. Now that it's being leaked, it's a whole new game altogether. Because he has lived the last few months thinking that this stuff was sealed and not going to get out, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe he wasn't thinking that at all. Maybe his mind, because he couldn't answer questions like, I know every employer I've ever worked for, and I know the name of the companies I've worked for. He couldn't think of things like that. And that is odd to me. I mean, you may forget a company that you work for, but then when you remember the company you work for, you remember the name of it. But it just seemed a little bit off. Maybe there's some other I don't want to create this. And by all means, Mr. Good, if you hear this, you are welcome to sue me for anything that I say, because I'm really trying to not say things that I would normally, like if you and I were just sitting at a bar talking. So we've got people listening to us. But at the same time, you've got some self-reflection that you need to sit there and you need to sit and look at a mirror and go, okay, this is what I think you should do. It's my opinion. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a therapist. Yeah. But I would look in that mirror and go, is this the person I want to be? Do I want to live this facade and then try to just milk it for as long as I can? Or should I just come clean and lick my wounds and go on? Because you know what? During this, I found out I'm a good content creator, or I'm a good this or that. And he did. Obviously, he did. Look at all that was done. And Gaia is a huge company. It's like $200 million.
Absolutely. So, and they took the idea once again and ran with it after, like he said, I'm not absolving them.
No,
by and any they, means they love for carrying I mean, this on.
Yeah. And Gaia is, that's what they do. They bring controversial subject matter, somewhat questionable subject matter, kind of like the History Channel does, and they put it out there knowing that there might be some questions about it, but hey, that to me gets in that little gray.
I don't know, man. I don't really.
No, I'm not trying to throw them under the bus. I'm not trying to say they're like ancient aliens or something. I will pounce on ancient aliens every chance I get. That show is just the most utter.
There is some interesting reasoning, to say the least, in some of it.
Oh my god!
And
they actually bring out some very controversial subject matter that other channels just don't have the balls to do.
They do, they do.
And so he has a relationship that I've talked to the people that own, that work that company, and I think one of our conversations is actually Don Greenwald. Put on the internet of one of the that I was having with Gaia. But anyway, so in my conversations with Gaia, I view them as an organization that is looking for material that otherwise probably won't be on other platforms. They're looking for something that makes them unique, and they found their niche and they do well at it.
They do great at it. I love their content. I'm a Gaia subscriber. It's the fact of if you help push this paradigm. Granted, they have at the beginning, they've got their disclaimer at the beginning of all. Yep. I should really put one at the beginning of Curious Realm, on screen that I'm surprised I haven't yet. That, the opinions expressed on Curious Realm are not necessarily that of the network, network affiliates or sponsors of the program, because I am willing to believe the experiencer until proven otherwise.
I agree.
We've got a proven otherwise situation, and you are coming back at this point and saying that this all is a woven fiction from channeled sessions that you had.
I hope this deposition is held confidential so I never have to admit it. We're seeing a video of a person who probably would not be saying the things he's saying if he knew that this deposition would become public. If he knew that, I think we would see a very different story. Now, Stephen Camion brought that up in his show too.
Yeah.
Because he brought up that stuff. He says, I bet we're seeing a different story than we would have if he knew that this, like if this was streamed live or something, we would get totally different answers.
They asked if it was streamed live.
Yeah,
it was being confessed. It was being streamed out to their law
on the Zoom. Yeah, on the Zoom call to the members of the attorneys and Corey's attorney asked specifically, you know, where exactly is this going? And it's like, what do you mean? it's a Zoom call. It's just like if someone was on the phone with you.
Yeah.
But now that I guess now they know where it went.
And once again, just to be clear, folks, it came out just in session three of this deposition, and I've watched probably about 6 hours of this deposition. It came out in session three that his intellectual property is the Blue Avians. He came up with that in his meditation sessions. They are his meditative guides. It came out that the secret space program is made up, that it is part of a woven fan fiction based upon an experience he had in some sort of experiment when he was a kid. And it came out that he believes that the people who follow his what he claimed to be true are delusional. Now remember the fact that these delusional people were told what you were saying was true.
Yeah.
Not that they were channeled sessions. Had you been upfront about channeled sessions, what have you, once again, I am prone to believe the experiencer until proven otherwise. I would have believed your channeled sessions 110% until somebody proved that you didn't experience that in a channeled session.
Right.
However,
and see, my first thought process when you say it that way is, I believe that you believe that what happened during your channeling experience, and that kind of absolves both of us of everything at that point. It's like, I believe you believe it. I don't necessarily believe you actually did it, like in the real world. He doesn't believe it because he knows it's a fiction. Yeah, he knows it's 100% fiction, and that's the problem, is that when he openly admits that, because he seemed dance around a little bit, but he came clean because he knew he's under oath, and if he didn't, he would lose that. The lawsuit, he's probably lost it anyway.
Well, he's under deposition, not under oath. He's not under oath in a deposition.
No, he is under oath. I'm sorry, sir. He is under oath.
Well, yeah, I didn't think that they oathized him at the beginning of it. I thought she was saying, I'm just a court reporter and I didn't have power to do that.
It's almost exactly as if you're in court. You have to, when I've done a lot of depositions, I've questioned people in depositions, and I've been in every state. I've probably done depositions in maybe 25 states. And in all of the depositions I've been involved with, they have all started with them. Do you swear to tell what you're saying is the truth? Blah, 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 blah. Raise your right hand. And they do it in every instance. I've never seen them not do it. But at the same instance, the deposition is a little bit more forgiving in that it's understood you're not in a courtroom setting, and it's understood that you're not like ready for trial. So some information may not be under that. Now, he alluded to the 30-day rule, his attorney did, that they had just produced some of the information, so they weren't sure if some were duplicative or some of the information was not, and so forth. So I get that from the technical aspect, because the technical aspect I'm actually more knowledgeable on corpus. Well, you already know some of the court stuff I've done, but that is a more of a procedural situation where when he's talking. If he lies in a deposition, it's not the same as if he lies in court. I think that's where you're probably leaning towards that way.
Yeah.
And that is somewhat true, because you're given more leeway in that you can make mistakes in your deposition. That's why, like 2 weeks after his deposition, he will receive a booklet, and that booklet will basically state that since your deposition,
Yeah.
If you have found subsequently that some of the information you've given is not true and or not factual or maybe inaccurate, yeah. you have the opportunity now to clear it. If you do not clear that and you go into court and that deposition hasn't been corrected at that point in time,
yeah.
if you reiterate something that was in your deposition and say that was true and correct at the time, then you can still be in contempt. So yeah. it is.
Well, at that point, you literally sign off and say, yes, I've read the deposition and yep. I know this and to I be heard, true.
Yep.
What I said in the deposition is what I know to be true. I don't think I forgot yep. anything there, because the deposition is really just an exploratory to find yep. out what you know about what.
Right. And what you know about at the time of the yeah. deposition and what you knew about what. At the time you knew about the what, kind of like when Clinton yeah,
at
asked
the time what the that the what happened.
Yeah.
And, exactly. and that's just it. That is exactly what came out in this deposition, is that he knew from the beginning what he was saying was a fiction.
Right.
He yep. knew from the beginning, whether it is a fiction he was told under session or a fiction mm-hmm. that he made up based upon personal life experience.
Right.
Either way, he knew it was a fiction and sold yeah. it as otherwise.
And sold it as actual, legitimately happening in the real world as everyone would have experienced it. If someone yeah. would have been with him at the time that he did the things that he claimed he did, it wouldn't be him sitting on a couch with his eyes rolled back in his head living yeah. that experience. It would have been everyone, you know, going, holy crap, we're on the moon fighting aliens. Well, guys, let's go.
And just because you didn't ask for the crowd of people to follow behind you doesn't mean that you aren't accountable for the crowd
Correct.
Of people or
That's
the
right.
actions That's of the crowd of people
yep.
that have yeah. gathered because of you and your actions.
Yep.
So, and that's what we're really up against here, is finding out, like, I mean, we've already found out what he knows yeah. about the what and when. We know that from the get-go, he knew he was weaving a story of fan fiction from a couple of experiences he had in life and from channeled experience meditation sessions that he had.
Yep. And then when he realized he was out of material, he had to create more material and a reason and way for that material to exist, because he couldn't account for time. It'd be like me going yeah. back and saying I was in the military for 20 years. I wasn't in the military for 20 years. So, you know, if I said that, then I'd have to go back and create all this other stuff. And so,
yeah, the difference is you're old.
And so he had to create these 20-year regenerative, you know, sessions of time
yeah.
that could be compressed. He's like, wow, God, the theory, you know, quantum mechanics.
Great work of fiction.
Yeah,
great work of fiction.
Awesome. You know, and more power to him for that.
You could have won all kinds of awards for your fiction had you just said it was fiction.
Yep.
Once again, to literally call the people who followed you down the road delusional.
Yeah.
Makes you more accountable for what you told them after realizing they were following you and that they were delusional.
Yep.
Like, I'm sorry. Once you know it's a sin, you're now accountable.
Exactly. And then calling yourself delusional doesn't really make it
better. It doesn't help the cause.
It's like, well, I was drunk too. When all this happened, we were all drunk, so we all told the same story about the 12-foot, you know, fish that we caught, but it was only a salamander or some shit, you know. Well, yeah, we get it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where we're at right now with the story of Corey Good, folks. That is basically what has come down the pipe. I literally got a text from somebody while we were talking on air here, Mike, like, hey, what's up with Corey Good? And I was
really?
Like, you should tune into the show. We're talking about that right now.
That's awesome.
But quite literally, yeah, it is rippling through the community as we speak. Want to give my personal thanks not only to you as always, but to you for building the bridge between us and Steve Cambion over at Truth Seekers. Steve, you're doing the Lord's work over there, my man. Keep doing what you're doing.
He deserves a lot of credit, man. He has the balls to do this, and he was sent a letter, like a cease and desist letter, to stop, to not do this. And he, basically the attorneys of Good, the Good's attorney, people with the name Good should change their name. Good's attorney made a huge mistake, and that mistake is why these are out there. And it's also why there's nothing they can really do about it. You can't put the toothpaste back into the tube now. It's out. So we'll see what happens. But, again, like you, Stephen Cambion, I consider him a friend. And I think that he's done a wonderful job, an incredible job at this. And, more power to him. So definitely, take a look at that. And plus the commentary in the panel that he had on his show when he was releasing this information, some of the panel members that he had had a lot to say that are directly connected to this. So it's very interesting to definitely check that out as well. And he finally made a playlist. He hasn't had a playlist ever until this week. So now he has a playlist. You can follow along.
Once again, Stephen Cambion, thank you for all that you're doing over there at Truth Seekers. Thank you, Mike, for always being willing to come on, always being willing to build these bridges of communication and information for our show and for our community. For those of you out there, all I can say is, once again, the reason I posted that video earlier today, we've got to learn to filter ourselves. We've got to learn to temper ourselves. We've got to learn to be ready for what appears to just be what is. And if it smells funky, it might be funky, you know. There were a lot of extreme claims made by Corey Good that could not be backed up by fact. And you really do have to consider that. You really do have to stop and think about that. And that's he was somebody that my shoulders always shrugged every time somebody mentioned him, like, oh, what do you think about Corey Good? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story. Have secret programs? Yes. Do we have, I mean, good Lord, the X-37B we talk about all the time, flying over our head for 2.5 years before we ever heard about it landing. We have these programs. We have programs. Don't get me wrong. Do we have programs like what he's talking about, where we are age regressing people after a 20-year trip beyond? I don't think so. I don't think so. Amazing fiction. If you're out there writing it, accept awards, go out there, be proud of the fiction that you are creating and crafting. Be willing to see it as thus. Please do not sell it as fact. It is hurtful to communities. It is hurtful to those who are such a stone cold believer, as my favorite song says, that,
extraordinary claims
that they're unwavering when it comes to believing somebody that comes through a source that they like.
Right.
You know, I like this guy. I like his research. He's great. He says this guy's cool. I believe him. And we have to be careful of that. We have to be wary of that within communities. Michael, thank you as always for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Let people know where they can go to follow the work of 5x5 News, where they can keep up with you, everything else, my good man.
Probably the best place would be to go to YouTube and search for 5x5 News, which is 5x5 News. There you'll find our channel. You'll find that it's sparse at the moment for the last few months because I've been working on several projects. But that will change here in the first week of January. I'll have a new video coming out that will go back into the videos that were brought out by the Navy and explore them in a way that you've never seen before. It's going to be all new stuff, all different, nothing like you've ever seen. So that's what's coming. But yeah, that's it. Just 5x5 News on YouTube will be the primary source, and Twitter. You can catch me on Twitter if you want to interact with me. That would be probably the best way to do it. And I'm very open there as far as, you know, in other words, don't ask a question that you don't want a truthful answer to, because you're going to get it.
Or an honest answer, too.
Exactly. Yeah, an honest answer. That's so true.
You pull no punches, and buddy. That's what I love about you.
I appreciate you, buddy. We got to, I truly appreciate you being in my life. I'm so happy that, you know, that Shannon put us together. And,
absolutely.
And you've been a pillar, you know, during all this, and someone to talk to that knows a whole lot more about this subject matter than I do when it comes to this stuff. I've learned more from you than I think you've learned from me, to be honest with you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I've learned an insane amount from you though, Mike.
Appreciate it.
So I want to thank you for your time as always. Thank you so much for the bridge that you have helped build between mm-hmm. Truth Seekers and Steve Cambion and us. We're going to go ahead and let you go, my man, while we head on out to commercial break. And
you got to change something. You can't, no longer can you say be good at it.
Oh, that's right. No, it's stay curious now.
Stay curious. Okay. Cause I was going to say to be good at it. I don't know. I have new meaning now.
That's anyway, right. Yeah. No more. If you can't be good at it. No more of that. I don't know if that would be politely accepted anymore.
True.
All right. Well, take care, my friend. Be good and be safe out there.
You too, man.
Take care. Bye bye. While you are online checking out everything from Mike Turber, folks, of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is your home for all of the episodes. That is where we have the share your story page, CuriousRealm.com/story. That is our experiencer page where you can go and share your experience of the paranormal, being a targeted individual, what have you. Share your evidence, and we will present it to our professionals. When we come back from our commercial break, we will be joined by Archbishop James Cloud. He is an exorcist. He is the author of the Exorcist Guide or Exorcist Memoir of the Paranormal. I figured it's Christmas time and coming up on New Year. I figured it was time for us, especially with this topic happening tonight, we need to learn to lose a little bit of judgment in the world and our leap to immediate judgment. So, when we come back, we're going to be talking with, Exorcist and Archbishop James Cloud about demoniac obsession, the concept of a personal obsession going so far that it actually opens a window for an attached spirit or entity to take over your power of will. So we'll be getting into that and so much more with James Cloud right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from this commercial break. Our guest in this segment is Archbishop James Cloud. Where'd his book go? Wow, there it is. He is the author of Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. We have had him on numerous times talking about demonology, talking about spirits, talking about the world of the paranormal, exorcisms, and the exorcismic process. However, I wanted to have him on going into the new year. This is a time of year for, you know, new beginnings for a lot of people, things like that. And I wanted to go into the steps before full on possession happens of a soul. And I know we talk about a lot of things on this show, folks. We talk about a lot of topics. As many of you know, I myself am a former Catholic seminarian. No longer a hugely practicing Catholic, go to Mass a few times a year. My spiritual choices, but I guard myself. I keep myself close to what I know to be my God. I keep myself spiritually grounded. I keep myself as guarded as one can possibly get, I think, because I spent years studying the world of demonology, exorcism, and it's interesting. Welcome back to the show, Archbishop James Cloud. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing all right. Where I was going with this was many years ago, I was introduced to the amazing Malachi Martin. Father Malachi Martin mm-hmm. was an exorcist. He wrote numerous books. He was one of the only Jesuits to ever be fully relieved of his duties by the Pope himself. Just like you've done more than enough. Spiritual battle, everything else. You are relieved of duty, sir. And his book, Hostage to the Devil, somewhere back here on these shelves, I have a first print copy of it. And in that book, that was the first time in hearing him on Coast to Coast many years ago when he was still alive, was the first time that I was ever really introduced to the concept of demoniac obsession. And it really rang home to me as somebody who had his battles with addiction, things like that. Mm-hmm. This concept of relinquishment of the will to something other than yourself. And mm-hmm. that being a big root of and that's what Malachi Martin said, was that after years of being an exorcist, after years of this kind of spiritual work, he walked the streets and saw so many people in a state of demoniac obsession.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that he highly warned about, was this state of surrender of the will to something. And I think that's a topic that bears discussion. So let's start getting into that a little bit.
Sure. Absolutely. Where would you like me to start?
Well, it's hard to not really start at the beginning, you know, and mm-hmm. the idea of, Are there entities, beings, things out there that are actively stalking us?
Sure.
That would be the first question. Because I think for anybody to accept the concept that you might be demonically possessed or possessed by an invading spirit, you would have to believe in the afterlife, believe in good and evil, and believe in the concept of an evil spirit or an ill-willed spirit to begin with.
Sure. Well, you know what? There are a lot of ways that a person can garner the intention of the diabolic. And in some of the ways would probably surprise individuals that are listening or would listen in the future. Some ways could include pornography. That a demon of lust gets the attention of this person watching pornography. And then
that person has fantasies, the demonic influences. Hey, you know, you got all these awesome fantasies. Why don't we step it up a notch? And let's see what happens if presented with the opportunity to act on the fantasies. And then it just snowballs from there. And then a marriage is destroyed. You know, children are hurt because mom or dad is no longer in the home, or, you know, something like that. And that fits the diabolic game plan, because demons are out for nothing but the destruction and ruination of the human spirit. Or another way could be constantly obsessed with watching ghost stories and thinking to yourself, man, that it's scary, but how cool would that be to see something like that? And then that garners the attention of the diabolic, and they start watching, observing you. And then all of a sudden they're partnering with you in making the how cool would that be to see part come to reality. And then that snowballs from there into something else. I mean, I'm not saying watching a ghost story is going to get you obsessed or possessed or infested or anything like that. I'm just saying,
yeah,
if you are making that desire or fantasy a major part of your life, the possibility exists that a diabolic could latch on simply for that reason. Because in some way, it's an invitation to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how a lot of things start. And or even demons of wrath. You know, you're naturally ornery person. I'll just say ornery person. but the demon of wrath comes in, watches you. He's like, hey. He likes to kick it up a notch, so I'll help him kick it up a notch, and we'll go from there. And now that person's in prison, their life is ruined, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and, you know, we've had the conversation before with you about the concept of opening the window, so to speak. And like you're saying, intent has a lot to do with that, whether or not you're playing with a Ouija board, whether or not you're drawing circles of protection on the ground, what have you. You don't have to do that to invite these spirits to come along and play.
Not at all.
And I think that's an important thing to note. You also don't have to believe in them. For them to come along and play. They play by a different set of rules. And we've had the conversation. I find it really interesting that you bring up the idea that watching these things can put you in a mindset that opens a window that invites the vampire in.
Absolutely.
And the main reason I bring it up is because there, within this community, and you're in a lot of the same communities that I'm in on social media, a lot of the same adjunct communities, when it comes to paranormal, such as UFOs, UAPs, cryptids, things like that. And, we have had the conversation a few times with Jared McClellan about the idea that, there may be other entities that are using our preconceived notion of what we would accept.
Sure.
So if you're out in the middle of the woods and it's like that entity's there, but you're somebody who's open to an experience with Bigfoot, and you're like, man, you know, this is squatching territory. I hope I have a sighting.
Sure.
They can tune in on that and actively use your belief and want for that as a means by which to encounter you.
Nathaniel. And the Bible calls those deceiving spirits or lying spirits.
Yeah.
They do exactly what you're describing.
Well, and Nathaniel Gillis says the same thing when it comes to alien abduction. Not that there aren't cases of alien abduction, things like that, but many cases of alien encounter, things like that may actively be experiences with the demonic, or experiences with a darker entity that is using your power of consent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, how does one go about because you can and this surprises a lot of people, but this is how false confessions end up happening with with police. You can falsely give consent. You can accidentally give consent. You can give consent without knowing it.
Sure you can.
Let's get into that a little bit, because I'm holding in my hand right now the Roman ritual, which is actively the part of the many books given to Catholic priests. I don't think many of them get the ritual nowadays. The Vatican has reopened the School of Exorcism as of 2013, 2012. It's interesting to me because I think for a long time there was a shy away from this concept of the existence of an evil, existence of something other than. And it was right up around the same time that they started saying the existence of aliens, the existence of UFOs does not revoke any spirituality, it does not revoke any salvific act of Christ, things like that, that they reopened this school of theology, exorcism. And now I guess what comes to bear and the question that comes to mind for me is, nowhere in this book, it gives a lot of instruction on how to find an exorcist. It gives a lot of instruction on what an exorcist should be, how they should prepare themselves for an exorcism. And it gives a few things on how to identify somebody who might be possessed. It even goes into the fact of, you know, you need to contact physicians, make sure that they are not mentally incapable in some way. However, it gives no warning about, quote, the near occasion of sin, or how one gets to this point. So I guess what the question that comes to bear for me is, how are these priests even supposed to be able to teach somebody how to avoid it? Who spent time in the seminary and spent time learning to proselytize and teach these things, like, if it's not being taught to the common seminarian that this is the case, how are we supposed to avoid that near occasion of sin?
Well, and I think that's one of the biggest disservices the seminaries do. Mm. You know, they talk about, you know, the path of salvation, the salvific message, and you know, the atonement of Christ and repentance, and which is all awesome. I mean, that's great. But they also have to teach the reality of the evil one in the world and the minions of the evil one that are actively trying to devour our souls. I mean, the Bible says your enemy is like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. I mean, it makes no bones about it. The devil's real, his minions are real, and everything in between that are trying to put a wedge between you and God. And that really needs to be pushed home when it comes to avoiding the near occasion of sin. Because if you are, you know, actively involved in your flavor of the month sin, you open yourself up to the possibility that a diabolic might say, hey, I like what you're doing here. I like you're giving God the finger. So let's go ahead and see what we can do with that.
Yeah.
And it goes from there, because, you know, your listeners have to remember, the devil and the demonic hordes can do nothing to hurt God himself or the angelicos. I mean, literally, he they can do nothing to hurt God. The next best thing is to hurt those he loves. And by proxy, hurts God's heart. And so that's the real push. You know, people ask, well, why would a demon be interested in me? Because God created you in his image and he loves you. He wants you to be with him. And these creatures are so full of bile and hate and wickedness that are utterly outside redemption. They want you to be with them. And by doing so, they can hurt God's heart by proxy. And so people need to understand, God has, you know, avoiding the near occasion of sin. God doesn't put the rules of, you know, thou shall and thou shalt not into the Bible to be, you know, the divine buzzkill for fun and everything else. He says, don't do these things, basically because you're going to wind up being hurt as a result of doing these things. You're going to be in, you're going to experience trauma. You're going to experience pain. You might even be killed in the practice of these things. Don't sure. do them. But, you know, we as humans, just as Lucifer did in his pride, we in our pride go, well, it sounds fun. What's the harm in having a little fun or doing, you know, X, Y, Z? Well, the harm comes in the consequences that follow. And a lot of them are natural consequences, not even judgments. I mean, it's just the natural flow of a course of events, such as, you know, because I'm also a master's level substance abuse counselor as well as a mental health professional. So the substance users I've encountered in the past, you know, they start off, hey, they just need a little extra pep, so I'll just use a little bit of meth, be able to clean the house, take care of the kids. I mean, and these are like soccer moms.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, normal, they're not coming from the wrong side of the tracks or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, it, just a little bit, you know, just to help. And then that progresses until now they're using IV drugs. They're selling themselves or their bodies for the substances, or they're selling all their things. They lose their kids. It just snowballs. This is the things that God is saying, you need to avoid the near occasion of sin because crap will happen if you don't listen.
It rolls downhill. And quite literally, I can say that and attest to it. Because I lived a good life. I did good things. I helped. I was involved in my church community. I was an assistant youth mm-hmm. minister. I taught religion and spirituality. That did not mean that I wasn't fighting my own demons on the side, and that because of that, and because of choices that I had made, especially the choice of, it's all too much now. I don't want to feel it anymore.
Yeah.
And quite literally that's what I traced it back to, Father, was the fact of, after leaving the seminary, the pain of that, the imagined pain of an imagined failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, man, only I got 10 fingers. Out of every finger that enters the seminary, one might come out with a collar, you know? So my odds were not on favorite to begin with. Much less of the fact of I was there for a spiritual lesson, not there to achieve an ultimate goal. I put that on myself. I put myself in the situation of feeling those things. And through years of working and helping other people, I was not working and helping myself.
Yeah. And that's a legitimate problem. A lot of helpers never help themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Never take time for self-care.
Yeah. And that's just it. It led me down a path where I didn't want to feel anymore. I didn't want to be connected to that anymore. And now I find myself many years later, sometimes struggling for the connection that I had with ease. You know,
yeah.
Because I was somebody who enjoyed ecstatic prayer and sure. enjoyed my ecstatic connection. And now I struggle with that. So that's one of the many repercussions that I've had to deal with because of the choices that I made to disconnect myself and become somebody who, yeah, honestly, was demoniacally obsessed. I had surrendered my will to a substance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well, and you know what? There's a very bright, glowing, illuminating silver cloud.
Oh,
silver
yeah.
lining.
Please.
In that is the fact that, and this is something your listeners can take home and apply to their own lives and hopefully will help them down the road, or if they're going through it now and they're feeling this, can help them now. I've ran into so many people in my professional life, you know, as a substance counselor, a mental health counselor. They say, you know, I've done, and even as a clergyman, you know, I've done so many things. How could I ever even remotely try to come back from it? You know, how can I even remotely repair what I've destroyed? You know, yeah. how do I build back those bridges that are now, you know, not only on fire, but got nuked? And scripture tells us, one, if you're having you feel like God would never accept you back for whatever reason, you know, this XYZ sins that have led to tremendous consequences in a person's life, that the scriptures remind us his mercy is new every morning. His love for us is unfailing. And if we put our trust solely in Christ, he said he promises us he'll never leave us nor forsake us. And so it's a matter of reinvesting in the relationship with God, or reinvesting in the upbuilding and reinventing of one's own self in the secular context to build up their life again after it's been destroyed.
Yeah.
Because the beauty of this life is that as long as you have breath, there is still a chance and at redemption, there is still a chance at renewal, and there is still a chance at creating a better life than the one you had before. But it takes us getting us out of that mindset that, oh, well, God would never accept me, or how could people ever accept me if they know I used a substance, or how could anyone ever accept me if they knew I used to be an adulterer, or I murdered someone in anger, or how could anyone, you know, yeah. You could play the scenarios, but they all end up in the same place. How could I actually be something more than I think I am?
Mm.
Well, the answer is God says if you put your faith in Christ, you are a child of God. You are his. He loves you. And in that state, you can call him Abba, which in Aramaic literally means daddy. You can crawl up on his chest, into his lap, and say, Daddy, I'm having this problem. Help me. And he will. He'll send the Holy Spirit to work with you, build you up, and make you into an entirely new creation.
And with that in mind, I mean, a lot of the reason I wanted to do this episode with you, Father, was because we're coming up on the new year. A time when people are rededicating their lives to new causes. We're coming sure. up on Christmas time, a time where a lot of people have spiritual turmoil, and turn
sure.
to these
Absolutely.
Things, turn to these things to once again, dull their senses or dull the pain that they may be experiencing. And believe me, folks, once again, I've been there. There is a way back. There is a way to walk yourself back. It begins with forgiving yourself. Not forgetting what you've not forgetting what you've done or the path that led you to where you are. Remember it markedly in your life. But also remember that there is a path back. You can forgive yourself for being human and having a fault and making a bad choice and just not make that choice again. Now with that being said, for all those out there who may not be experiencing this obsession, this point of obsession themselves, how can people spot this point of obsession in their loved ones? How can they, start to see the fact that somebody close to them has relinquished their will?
I think one of the first basic steps is to evaluate what does that person focus on in their life? You know, what is that thing or things which take up a good portion of their time doing, thinking about, participating in, that sort of thing? You know, if a good chunk of your life, you know, so I'll throw this out there too. I've had to exercise a lot of paranormal investigators for this very reason. Mm-hmm. So I say this from a point of experience, not of judgment or anything else, because that's not my job to judge. I'm here to walk with people and warn, but ultimately what they do, that's on them. But many paranormal investigators devote their entire life and build their entire identity around going to graveyards, trying to conjure spirits, talk to the dead, you know, get quote unquote proof, even though copious amounts of proof exists, that there's something other than just what we can see and touch and experience with our five senses, that actually exists in the world. You know, they build up, they focus everything on contacting the other side, or however you want to, you know, frame that. But, and then are totally surprised when they get a haunting, an infestation, a possession, an obsession, oppression in their own lives. And they're like, oh, I was just helping others and just look. No, you were actually opening up doors at every chance of opening every door in your obsession, because this is what it really is, an obsession with the paranormal. You know, so what a healthy interest in the paranormal would most likely look like is you acknowledge, yeah, there's some freaky deaky things out there. You know, yeah, there's some really weird things that happen. You might investigate it at the request of the church to go out and say, hey, let's look at this. Let's get some evidence, take it back to the church. Is there enough evidence for a priest or a bishop or whomever to come out from the church and address these things using the rite of exorcism or whatnot to help these people? And then we move on. That would be a healthy, because there's a purpose to it. It's not just, you know, the whole identity of who you are. And I think you could apply that to most any other thing in this life. If you identify with only, I'm so rich and I'm so powerful and I'm so famous, this is who I am and this is what makes me me, well, the demons of pride would love to have a piece of you.
Yeah.
You know, the real, but that's why the scriptures tell us time and time again, our identity should be found in Christ, not in anything else in this life. because of the fact that you do have little predators that watch you, circle you, and look for your flavor of the month sin, shall we say.
I'm gonna start the sin basket, sinbasket.com. That'll be it.
Where you too
can get your monthly basket of sin sent to you or your loved one. Sin of your choice. You can get a blind basket and, you know, be exposed to new sins.
You betcha. Open it with your family and your children every month and see what new sins pop out.
No better Christmas gift. I'm a horrible human being.
Yeah, but it's funny.
Not to make too much levity about the situation, but we
sure.
We have, I guess, especially here in the West, a very narrow view of these things, and I remember. We've had the conversation. I've had the conversation on the show before about my experiences with the paranormal, with shadow people,
sure.
that reached right on out and touched me. And when I took that to my spiritual director and mentioned it to him, he was like, "Yeah, the church doesn't really have a teaching on that." And that's when a lot of my real issues, began, because I could not reconcile, the fact that the church didn't have a teaching on that. You have a teaching on the fact that apparently these evil critters are stalking my soul around every corner, as St. Augustine said. But you're telling me there's no teaching on that?
And what's funny with that is, if that spiritual director knew his scriptures, not just the church tradition, but knew his scriptures,
yeah,
there would be copious amounts of teachings on it. And shadow people are found in the book of Job, which I don't think I ever hear anyone talking about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please. You go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, a shadow person appeared to one of Job's friends and was telling lies to try to get Job away from God.
Yeah.
And to, you know, curse God. Like his wife said, you know, curse God and die, Job. You know, life sucks.
Yeah.
And, but the shadow person appeared, and a person should read that. I believe it's Job chapter 4, if memory serves.
I am going there now.
It comes into the room. It produces chills. He felt, you know, his bones were shaking or something like that, and started talking to him. So there's absolutely teachings and references in the scriptures to all paranormal activities. But people have to know the scriptures.
Yeah.
And the saddest thing is that today most ministers, Protestant, as well as Catholic of all flavors, you know, Roman, Orthodox, Coptic, etc., they don't get into the scriptures like they should, and therefore they fall to error as a result.
Mm. Well, and you know, Job particularly is one that I give it as an example of the fact of anybody can be tortured.
Sure.
Because Job was not of the people of God.
No,
he believed in God. He followed God. He was a righteous man. He lived right. And this is the example that I give to people of, you know, like there's many a path to enlightenment and the other side. You know, Job is a prime example where even Job had the eye of God. And he was not somebody who went to the temple. He was not somebody who gave burnt offering or anything like that. Yet Job had not only the eye of God, but the favor of God. And so much so that, here in Job, we see the devil pop up in the heavenly court. So apparently they're still cool.
Yeah, he still has access to the courtroom.
Yeah, you know, like apparently he can still pop up and be like, hey, what's up? You know, so
well, there's a reason why he's the accuser of the brethren.
That's it. So I'm not going to say full on collusion with God, but the acceptance of the fact of there has to be the other. Otherwise we are puppets on strings. We don't have free will. We don't have choice to choose that love,
exactly.
Above all else. And
without choice, you'd just be a robot blindly following orders. Yeah,
exactly. And in addition to that, you see the fact that, this person who is not of God is perfectly accepted by God to be, I guess made example of and tortured by the evil forces.
And the thing with Job is, you know, Job is the oldest book written in the Bible. That's actually the oldest written book in the Bible. And Job didn't have necessarily the law. You know, the Judaic law, even though I suppose you could assume that he knew about the law. We really don't know where Job was located. We don't even know when the book of Job occurred. We just know that it was a very, very long time ago. And if he did not know the law of God, St. Paul brings out, you know, if no one's ever heard of Christ or the law or anything like that, that they become a law unto themselves by natural law. And so Job would have followed what naturally his conscience was telling him. Hey, you know, don't steal, don't kill, don't, you know, basically the law, but without the law. Similar to like a lot of the Native American religious tenets and such.
Sure.
You know, they had a lot of excellent law, basically, to themselves, but they'd never heard of the Jews or Christ or anyone else. And so St. Paul says those that have never heard, they're judged by the light received. However, St. Paul then says, so if Job had heard about the law or had heard about Christ, then he's liable to the law or to Christ. And of course, Christ hadn't come down with his advent at that time, but he would have been liable under the law had he ever heard of it. So that's the distinction I want to make with Job on that.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, that was the active running joke in the seminary all the time. Just so you know, can't do that one. You know, now.
Yeah.
Just educating your conscience.
Yep. Now you're screwed. Now you're screwed, buddy.
Have fun with that one now.
Yep.
But it's interesting to consider the fact that we can be tested. We can be poked. We can be prodded. Even once again, if you are not a person of faith, because Job, not a person of faith, got a whole book in the Bible about him. Pretty big example to the Jewish people, of how to get through trial and tribulation, things like that. Even the turn of phrase, the patience of Job, comes from it. He was not a man of faith. He believed in something greater than himself, the big capital G, but he did not believe in the God of the Hebrews.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
Yeah. So, we have to consider that, and we have to consider the fact that just because you don't ascribe to it, just to loop it back to the beginning of the conversation, just because you don't believe in them doesn't mean they don't have a strong belief in you.
Absolutely.
And with that in mind, how does the average person, I guess, begin to spot this influence? How can we guard against it? What kind of things, like you were saying earlier, things like even the most casual of things can become obsession when not taken carefully.
Well, one, it kind of gets into the for those that may have a reference point for this, the AA program, taking that that moral inventory of yourself,
sure,
that fearless moral inventory, taking a good hard look at yourself. You know, what is most important in your life? What are you trying to get out of it? How are you treating others? How are you actively looking for something larger than yourself? What does that look like? What are the characteristics of it? What are your characteristics? Is there something that's starting to seem like it's taken more time in your life because you're focusing on it? What is that? Is that healthy? Is that not healthy? Because heck, even too much exercise can kill a person. You know, they get overboard and have a heart attack or stroke or something else because they're just so gung-ho, and or they start taking steroids, or, you know, you can go down the hill. But even healthy things, if taken to an extreme, can be bad for you. You know, you drink too much water, your kidneys will crap out and you'll die. But you need water every day to live. So you could even look at that. You know, am I drinking too much metaphorical water in my life from one source? And is that becoming more prevalent in my life? But you also got to consider, you know, these guys are predators. So even if you're, quite honestly, even if you're living a very moral life and whatnot, and even going to church, going to the mass, or attending your local Protestant church or whatever that is, if you're, you know, you're really gung-ho on fire for God, you are still going to have attacks. You're still going to have these things that look at you waiting for an opening. There's actually if you have a collar. More especially, you have to very much guard yourself because I've had to exercise church buildings. I'll just throw that out there.
Sure.
Because people will say, oh, well, the devil can't come in the church. It's a holy place. Well, let's break
that's
this.
How you drag him in
this.
Right there.
Uh-huh. Let's unpack this. The church technically is the people.
Yeah.
The building we call a church is where the people, the church, actually gather to have church.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely. That's why, you know, crosses can, statues of Mary can weep blood and things can go crazy and fly around a church. I mean, just because it's a quote unquote holy place does not mean.
Yeah,
it's
that's
protected.
That is all inanimate object. Every bit of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, not to say that there has not been not many people realize that there are numerous forms of exorcism.
Yeah,
there is exorcism of the soul and a person, and there is exorcism of places and things. And whenever you are consecrating ground for a cemetery, for a church, what have you, that is exorcism according to Saint Michael and the Archangels. That is a very specific form of exorcism. It is the same form of exorcism that is performed at the time of baptism in the Catholic Church.
Yep. Where that is a form of exorcism.
Where there is literally a small exorcism performed before the baptismal rite to basically sanctify the child as a holy place themselves, as an edifice of God. And honestly,
and then like, the water of baptism is an exorcism.
Absolutely.
On top of it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not to get holy roller or anything like that, folks, but it is to recognize that these are the roots of it. And you can't acknowledge one thing without acknowledging the other.
Absolutely.
And we really do have to acknowledge that we as a society have become obsessed. Whether it's far left, far right. We've gotten to a point where there are families that will not get together this Christmas because of their obsession politically.
Yeah.
So politically obsessed or so obsessed with the decision of somebody else and why they made that decision that they still cannot see them as a human being and occupy the same space as them.
Yeah.
And when you stop and think about that, that's a huge tool. That's a huge tool of control on many, many, many levels. But when you're talking about a form of spiritual control, when you were talking about a form of spiritual oppression, brother, that's it.
Yep.
And people are putting themselves square in it regularly and giving their energy to that and putting their energy into that. And it is no less or no different than any egregore that a coven is trying to bring about in the world. You know, the idea of a magical being or entity that can serve a purpose that is created by a hive mind or a large group mind. And no real difference there. We are putting this energy into the world, and we are reaping it at the same time.
Yeah.
It's we've gotten to an interesting state. In that way, what can we do to, I guess, start softening our own hearts? What can we do to begin understanding? Because I really think there comes a point, even when you're dealing with somebody that might be obsessed that you don't know is obsessed, that it might just be enough, and that, you know, maybe you lose that sense of humanity or compassion with the situation, and wash your hands of it. What can we do to start, I guess, turning ourselves around, start turning around how we view people who are in this state, and what can we do for them?
Well, I think the first and foremost thing is to think to oneself is, except for the grace of God, there go I. So being able to understand that everyone comes from has had their own unique experiences in life. Many have come from trauma. Many come from broken homes or abusive situations or other things that have helped to shape their current belief systems, their moral systems, etc. That's the first thing. Because if a person can understand, and it doesn't mean you have to agree with that other person. You sure. can wholeheartedly disagree with a person and still have empathy and compassion for that person. You know, but that piece has been lost, like you said. You know, with the hard left, hard right, et cetera.
Yeah.
That piece, you know, hard left, hard right would like to put daggers to each other's throat and slit it and walk off.
Yeah.
which is the total antithesis as to what God has commanded us, you know, to love. To love doesn't necessarily mean you give them license to do anything they want.
Sure.
But you love them enough sometimes to correct them, but you also love them enough that you back off and, if necessary, give them enough rope to hang themselves.
Sure.
Because, you know, we all are walking this journey. I seriously doubt anyone has the sum total of all knowledge regarding spiritual matters except Christ himself and the Holy Trinity. Beyond that, I'm not even sure the angels have the full story, though, sure, they could. I'm just using it as an example.
A little closer to the source, but
they're
separated by job and rank, too. So
sure they are. Sure. And so we need to have that
know what
compassion.
The seraphim know.
Exactly. Exactly. Each one has their own department of knowledge.
That's right.
You know, but we need to give the same compassion, just as Christ said, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, the golden rule.
Yeah.
You know, give each other grace to not only have a different opinion, but also to be able to grow beyond that opinion. Because if either side, you know, hard left, hard right, or whatever you want to call it, if either side is doing nothing but browbeating the other, verbally or whatnot, they only harden that person's position.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, precisely. I prime example, the other day on social media, I had two responses to drag queen story time. And what was going on? I saw one person that I knew that was very right sided and very, very religious and saw quite a few people going very religiously on about, drag queen story time and the things that these, people reading stories to children will suffer, because of their choice as to what to wear. And my only response on their timeline, which stopped all comments thereafter, was hot take, Jesus loves drag queens.
Yeah, he does. He may I'll expand that in that he may say, hey, y'all need to get your life right, too.
I still love you. I don't enjoy the choice you're making, what have you, but I love you. And let's start there.
Absolutely.
And my second response was, I wonder how many of those protesters showed up with a book to read. Because I don't care who is reading stories to children or what they're wearing.
Uh-huh.
We need to be reading stories to children. So unless you brought a book with your protest sign, I think you might be the one traumatizing the children in this case.
Yeah.
Showing up with your anger in the middle of story time at a public library.
Well,
shouting
a lot of those things need to be discussed outside of the proximity of children.
Absolutely.
Because children aren't going to understand, for one. They'll just see a bunch of adults arguing. They'll get anxious.
Precisely.
And, I mean,
the example that's set there is, well, the aggressor is the person with the signs who's coming in angry, not the person who's calmly reading the story.
Yeah. And that may harden, you know,
that may harden that quite a few children's hearts.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. And they're like, I don't want to be with those angry, nasty people.
Yeah, precisely.
So, you know, if you have a problem with it, you know, you need to discuss that with the organization that's sponsoring it.
Yeah.
You need to, you know, talk. Yes, you have the right to protest. That's part of the Constitution. Sure. But just because you have a right to do something at a particular time, is that actually expedient to, and this can be applied to the left as well, you know, is that actually expedient to the thing you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, or should you not do it in front of the impressionable kids and kiddos that are doing or, you know,
yeah.
having a story read to them?
Yeah, yeah. That was my point.
Whatever.
As someone who used to be the person who read stories to kids was, hey, man, kids are just there reading, like having a story read. They literally have zero judgment about what that person's wearing or why.
Yeah.
Until
they
until
may look at them sideways.
They may look at them funny and go like, that man's wearing a dress. That's funny.
How weird.
but they'll rarely judge it unless that's been put in there.
Sure. Well, and that falls on the parents.
Well. And that falls once again on the concept of judgment to begin with, and not seeing things, starting with that best 4-letter word of all, love. And that concept of understanding to begin with.
And folks need to also understand when, like for myself, when I say, you know, we love everyone, even if we strongly disagree with them, it doesn't mean that we love them, quote unquote, to let them do whatever they want without warning them.
Yeah.
Because then that's license.
Yeah.
The license to, you know, like the old Beastie Boys, you know, license to ill.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you give them that license to do whatever they want, but that's not true love if you don't warn them as well. But you do it in a spirit of humility, in a spirit of humbleness when you warn others.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, which is totally lost. I mean, I don't see that happening often at all on left or right.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah. Not,
humility is like a foreign concept to most folks.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea of being able to step back. And not be involved in that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And we really do have to be willing to approach more situations like this. We really do have to be willing to approach every human being that we meet like this, Father. It's hard to get to a point of, I guess, being almost a social blank slate. To get to it. And I remember many, many years ago, a kid that I sponsored for confirmation, it was Lent, and we were talking about what we were sacrificing. And I had, he was talking about how we'd given up like Coke and pizza or something like that. And I was like, awesome. That's great. You know, I know how much you love your sodas. That's great. He's like, well, what are you giving up? And I was like, I'm giving up being judgmental. I'm not going to judge people via preconceived notions anymore.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's easy. And I was like, tell you what. It was Wednesday night. It was youth night. I was like, let's see if you can go through the night without being judgmental. Without causing judgment upon somebody or having a preconceived notion about what they think or why they're doing what they're doing. And after about an hour, he came back and was like, yeah, okay, that's really, really hard. and I'm not going to say that I'm not going to say that I don't jump to judgment, but I am pretty rationed with how I approach people and with how I take what people do and why they do it, you know?
Yeah.
And since that point, I have definitely changed in the way that I look at things and view things, and have definitely come to a much more compassionate view than the hard-nosed views I used to have.
Sure. Well, you know, I have an example like,
please.
So if I was, say I was in India, you know, as a bishop, and the Hindus are telling me, well, you know, Krishna in all these others are telling you, you know, if you don't not eat a steak, you're going to, if you eat a steak, you're going to, you know, burn in the fires of hell, whatever, you know, because cows are sacred over there. I would be like, I'm going to have a ribeye, dude. I like ribeyes.
Yeah.
Why? I don't grasp the concept of not eating a cow. It's holy to you, but I don't give a rat's butt. And it's the same concept when a Christian tries to tell non-Christians or those of different faiths, well, the Bible says blah, blah, blah. Well, yes, it's true. I'm not going to say it's not true. But if you're just saying it like that, they're going to have the same reaction that I would have to a Hindu priest telling me, you eat that cow, you're going to burn. I'd be like, where's my fork and knife? I'm going to eat this steak.
Yeah.
And so people have to have compassion on you. You have to show them the why, you know, why would this be bad? Why would this be bad? If you said the cow, you know, has a mad cow disease, don't eat the cow, you'll go nuts. Oh, okay. I probably will avoid eating the cow then.
Sure.
Or there's going to be some consequence because I'm following a certain action or behavior. Yeah. Okay. I can understand that. But if you just come shoot out right off the hip out of the gate with a foreign concept to an individual and are judging their behaviors from a foreign concept,
yeah,
one, they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And two, it doesn't mean a hill of beans to them.
Go,
so there's no change going to occur.
Go explain the concept of consuming the body and blood of Christ on a Sunday without explaining transubstantiation.
Exactly. Well, they'd get the same reaction.
Wait a minute. You're cannibals and you eat your God?
Yep. That would be the same reaction Christ himself got.
Yeah.
What? You want us to eat your flesh and drink your blood? Are you insane?
Whoa, wait a minute.
This escalated quickly.
I thought we were pretty law-abiding Jews here. Hold on.
What does this all mean? I'm leaving. You're nuts.
But yeah, you know, and you have to look at things in context. You have to look at things in the idea of, once again, walking a mile in somebody's shoes and what brought them to that point and seeing the love,
sure,
and compassionate point of even with somebody who is obsessed or
yes,
demoniacally,
absolutely,
obsessed. But yeah, and note, I used obsessed first because you could be obsessed about a lot of things. Once again, you could be obsessed about what those people are doing over there politically. And that is not psychologically a healthy thing.
No.
Much like saying you hate somebody. Like, wait a minute, you hate the president? Here's a quick psychological leveling question. Have you ever actually met the man?
Yeah. No, I just go off what people tell me.
Because if not, that's a little bit out there to say that, like, you hate somebody that you have never shook hands or shared the same space with. You may hate the decisions they make.
Disagree.
You may hate what they stand against, but you hate the person without actively, like, that's psychologically something wrong there.
Yeah. There's a big difference. You can strongly disagree
and
hate what they stand for, but them as a human being, you got to love them.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we've lost a lot of that. We've lost a lot of that as a society. We've lost a lot of live and let live. But at the same time, we have lost a lot of that caring for our fellow man and looking out for our fellow man. And I that's what I wanted to bring about in this conversation was the idea of keeping an eye out for your family members this holiday season, for your friends who may not realize that they have surrendered will to a substance or to a lifestyle. Even once again, going back to step four, let's accept step two to begin with, which is a power greater than yourself might restore your life to sanity.
Even if, you know, in AA views, even if it's a tree, hey, maybe the tree will be bigger than yourself.
That is literally what I say on this show. I don't care what you believe in, man. I don't. You have to accept that there is something greater than you in the universe, that you are not the end all be all. That is where the danger begins, period.
Yeah.
And you, I don't care if it's a dog, if it's the tree next door, doesn't matter. Care about something bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
Be in connection with something bigger than yourself.
Right there.
And hey, don't get me wrong. My AA was court ordered. But I read that, I read that book twice.
Oh yeah.
And I can't say as there has been a more straight to the point method of getting your life straight and keeping it straight than those steps. And being a friend of Bill. Now, I mean, you can see decanters behind me over my shoulder. I'm far from a raging alcoholic. I maybe have a couple few drinks a week. The compassion that I have for the people that I've met, the people that I know, who are friends of Bill. God bless every one of you this holiday season. Everybody who is suffering with that obsessive part inside of them, even if it's obsessive negative self-talk.
That's the worst.
Get past it. Get past it. You are worthy. You are worth being loved.
Absolutely.
You are worth loving yourself this year. And if the most selfish thing you do is work on yourself, go be selfish. That's literally the advice I can give. Go be selfish. If you think it's selfish to work on yourself other than working on other people all the time, go be selfish. Go work on yourself, because unless your cup is repaired and filled, it's hard to fill anybody else's. I want to thank you for
always. And that's true even for the clergy.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you know people of the collar, pray for them this year. They are in need of it more than any other. They are under more spiritual attack on the daily than your average bear. Especially good folks like you, Father, who are out there daily, shouting their name at the enemy. You're more than big shooting flares up, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you real quick. I don't mean to interrupt your thought.
No.
I'll tell you real quick. I had visitations before I did this radio show. There was a shadow entity that ran through the house.
Oh, wow.
Checking me out before I did this show, which is very normal because they don't like to be exposed.
Hmm.
And so I ran his little sorry butt right on out the door.
Wow.
But I get the visitors.
Wow.
Before an exorcism or before these types of shows. So legitimately, it's real.
Yeah. Yeah. My experiences steeled me with the fact that it was real. Real beyond anything else, and it was literally what begat my road to I gotta get out of this.
I hear you.
I want to thank you as always for coming on, talking about these topics. They are not easy to talk about. They are, especially in today's climate and in today's world, a lot of people are uncomfortable with them, but I think that they are period points of spirituality that we need to pay attention to, whether you're Christian or not. These are spiritual pillars that we need to try to edify our bodies and our minds with.
Yeah.
So, thanks always for coming on. I greatly appreciate your time. Let everybody know where they can go to pick up their copy of Walking with Ghosts, where they can go to contact you if they are in need of any spiritual work, such as exorcism of their home or somebody they love.
Sure. My book is on Amazon, Walking with Ghosts, an Exorcist Memoir of the Paranormal. I actually think you can get it for free if you do the digital version of the Amazon reader.
Yep.
Otherwise, if you want the physical, I think it's only like $6 or something like that. They set the price. And as far as contacting me, the main way to contact me, one, you can just find me on Facebook. I don't mind direct messages at all. Just James Cloud. I'm in Mobridge, South Dakota. So you have reference points. But also, you can contact the team's website, Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael, or PRISM. That's also on Facebook. You can access my page or the team's page. You know, I'm not one of these folks that you have to go through third-party proxies to get a hold of me. So feel free to do so. Even if I can't get to you, at least I can point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great holiday season with your family and your flock.
Yeah, you too. You enjoy it.
And hold on just a second while we close things out. While you are online contacting Archbishop James Cloud, getting his amazing book, Walking with Ghosts, an Exorcist Memoir of the Paranormal, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can find our knowledge vault full of declassified government materials and materials like we were talking about earlier with our guest Mike Turber. That is also where you can find your Share Your Story page. That is CuriousRealm.com/story. That is where you can go if you are an experiencer of the paranormal, if you have witnessed a cryptid, if you are a witness to being a targeted individual, anything like that. You can stop by, tell us your experience, and we will share it with our professionals on the show and talk about it and see if we can't maybe get you some answers. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in, everybody. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the knowledge vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.